our citizenship in the heavenly kingdom. Let's read this together. All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Believers are citizens of another country that makes them, in one sense, aliens and strangers here. But Paul reminds us, if you'd read this from Romans 13 with me, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. And they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So, believers are citizens of another country. They're citizens of a heavenly country. But the ruler of that heavenly country has also instituted forms of government and authority in the place which we currently inhabit, planet Earth. And he has purposes for that, and believers are supposed to respond in a certain way to the leaders that God has appointed. So we find again this juxtaposition and this sometimes unique balance that we're doing with leaders. So I'm going to open it up to you. I have 7 points that I'd like to go through, probably at varying length, but I want to put it out to you first. If you were going to disobey the government of the United States, the local government that you live under, Pennsylvania, if you were going to disobey your local township supervisors, how many know who their local township supervisors are? Anyone? Yeah, all right, thank you. Thank you, Dad. All right, I try to keep, I haven't looked lately, so I don't know if things have changed. I try to keep up so I can pray. Yeah, and I'm not, don't, that was a gotcha question. I'm not expecting that to be common knowledge. But if you're going to say no, if you were going to stand against a particular law, some kind of temporary injunction, we haven't seen any of those in the recent past, have we? Or if you were advising a friend, if a good friend came in and said, hey, I'm getting ready to say no to what the government, whoever that is in this case, is saying, what are some basic principles that you would want to keep in mind that would guide you or them in their actions and ensure as best you can, that your actions or their actions are pleasing to God? One more time. If you were, I'll get you first, Nicole. But if you were getting ready to say no, I'm not going to do this. And you might want to bring it up a while, Dan. Nicole's going to be first. If you were getting ready to say no, I'm not. The government's telling me to do this, and I'm not going to do it. Or a good friend came to you and said, I'm thinking I need to say no here. What are some guidelines? Before you step out in defiance, what are some guidelines you would want to have in mind to ensure that your actions or the actions of the person that you're advising are pleasing to God? Go, Nicole.
Well, first off, use whatever legal means possible first.
Okay.
most governments do have some sort of way to protest, to appeal, to do something to say, hey, like, what you're doing is wrong, what you're doing shouldn't be happening, and everything. So take every legal means possible first.
Okay.
And then be ready and willing to take the consequences that the government in place has placed in to the world. And don't then claim that it's unjust.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we have, within the laws of our country, the right to, I believe it's phrased, petition the government for a redress of grievances. If we have grievances, we can go to the government and ask them. And then what Nicole said, there's two sides to that coin. Number one, exhaust your legal means. And then secondly, be ready to say, this is what the law says, that these are the penalties the law says I will be under if I don't comply. I need to be ready to accept those. All right, good. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that legal means, but let's get some more ideas on the table. Tracy, where were you going to go?
Okay, and I was thinking, forgive me, my mind just...
I'm sorry that I babbled and probably driven out of your head.
That's fine. It depends on what the situation is. If it's someone saying, you know what, I don't like what the government's doing with my money, I'm not paying my taxes anymore. Well, God said we're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, we're supposed to render under Caesar that which is Caesar's and yeah. God to which is God. But if the government says it's okay to kill your baby, that's not okay with God.
Okay.
Therefore, we should not say, yeah, it's okay if I do this.
All right.
So it depends on what it is.
So let me take a few things from that, and you tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth. So, number one, take each occasion, on its own. Let's say, is this right? Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this wrong? Number two, God is the supreme authority. So we're looking to him to see, is the government asking me to do something? Is the government asking me to do something that God forbids? Or are they just asking me to do something I'm not particularly crazy about? Yeah. I want to push that tax issue a little bit further at some point. I want to talk about taxes today. Talking about government's not enough. But let me see if I can, let me come back to this. So I want to come back to Nicole for legal means, and I want to come back to Tracy's about tax. That's an interesting one. We'll see. Maybe we won't get there. But Brian, you were up.
So I think of two things. So first, if a law violates God's law, okay, then a Christian isn't obligated to follow that law. Secondly, the sole purpose of government is to protect life and property. It's why God ordained government in the first place. It's so roving bands of criminals just don't have their way with, anyone and anything, and there's complete lawlessness. That's sort of the purpose of government. So the moment their laws don't protect life and property, for example, you can't go to work, well, you have no means of survival. You're not protecting life. Or if governments refuse to put down a riot, then they're not protecting property.
Mm-hmm.
So those are instances where people can defy the government and accept the consequences if you're under bad government. Or, in the case of Daniel, or Cyrus or Xerxes, I don't remember who it was, he acknowledged that Daniel's God was God, so it went well for him, but... And there are situations where that's not true and that doesn't happen. And there are consequences.
I want to say with Daniel, Darius the Mede?
I
think so with the lion's den is what you're thinking of.
I'm thinking of.
I think so. But you check me on that. Millions of people are looking at millions of people here. Everybody's looking at Daniel right now to see if I'm right or wrong. But yeah, go ahead. All right. So, let's get a few more. Let me see if we can come back to Brian's too. Stan?
I'm not sure of the actual verse here. But there's a case in the Old Testament where there's an evil queen in power, and the priest kept the young boy for king.
Yeah, Queen Josiah, Athaliah, perhaps. Right?
Yes, and he actually had her put to death, the priest did. And so he usurped the authority that was there because of God's order of doing things. Now, where that leaves us in today in our government here in America is a bit different. We're not a theocracy. We're not quite in that same situation, but there does seem to be the time when there are grievances that are so out of step with God's order that people, if they have a proper structure, can rise up and resist for the right purpose. And I'm going to loosely say this, and it's very open for debate, but I go back to the differences between my understanding of what the French Revolution and the American Revolution were based upon and why the one, by God's grace, ended up lasting as long as it did with the aftermath, which was America, and why the French Revolution is defaulting into a bloodbath with constitution after constitution being turned out over time until it somewhat stabilized, but which the foundations were totally different, the way I understand it.
But. Okay. If you, and if you could, you could give us like the 30-second view on what was different between the American Revolution and the French Revolution.
Sure. And this may be subject for debate as well, but my understanding is that whether actual Christian or not, there was a desire for a God-oriented structure of government, at least with many of the founding fathers,
mm-hmm.
that there was a lot of scripture that was brought to bear. I think scripture was the number one quoted document for the foundation of the American government, and John Locke was second, I believe, and then Blackstone and others after that, whereas Europe was just, the French Revolution was purely an Enlightenment, secular-based, trying to overturn to make things better, rather than having a foundational principle upon which things were based upon.
Yeah, so the return to reason, right? Yeah. And we might say, too, that the fact that the American Revolution was essentially against, at that point, a foreign entity, a metropolitan power that was located, you know, thousands of miles across an ocean, and the one was held on its own. And the American Revolution was fought on its own soil. But, yeah, I mean, I wonder if that – yeah, definitely. I didn't think Stan was American versus the French Revolution. So, but thank you. That's – no, and I've heard things, sentiments like that echoed before. All right, let me get a few more. Araceli?
I have an issue with this with the law of the states and our government and that is supposed to help us to protect our property. And you, knowing that, you go to them, you ask for help. And knowing that that's your right to protect your property, mm-hmm. but they don't listen. And what do you... You're trying to follow what God is telling you to do the right thing, and you go to the people mm-hmm. that is supposed to be for you, and they're not for you, then what are you supposed to do then?
Yeah, yeah, and that's what, and that's part of our larger conversation.
Because if you are alone, nobody is with you, mm-hmm. then why that person is still using government when not listen to the issues that is only one person does know is not being affected is a lot of them.
Yeah.
Then what do the person, the civilian like me, was supposed to do?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's where we're going. And that would be the next step with what Nicole was saying. We seek legal means, and then what if legal means don't prevail? What if legal means are ineffective or insufficient to get government to recognize what we think is right? Then we get to what becomes the next step in the process. Where do we go from there? And again, not going to tell anybody, do this, don't do this. Just trying to get these thoughts out and germinating. Yeah, thank you. Sheldon.
One thing that I see in the modern day is the freedom of speech being attacked in ways that it's a demand on me and my freedom of as a Christian that I have to affirm and tell people what they are mm-hmm. according to their that moment, how they feel.
Yeah, talking about transgenderism
yeah.
in this
yeah,
case.
Yeah, it's just it's more than that. It's amazing how fast it's moving.
Yeah,
and there's a demand that I have to not just affirm it, but I have to voice it.
Yeah,
and be spoken about. And another one is I think California, they just mandated in their schools they have to teach their children transgender. Mm-hmm. So it's mandated in the school,
right.
And it's like,
right.
My advice would be get your kids out of those schools
yeah.
as fast as you can. Right. And I would like, for me, it would be like, I don't know why it's okay for you to feel like it's okay for 8 hours a day mm-hmm. to sit under that right. ideology.
Yeah, so I mean, and that would, and again, I'm also not going to solve the homeschooling versus public schooling topic right now. I will say I'm a product of public schooling, so that's the only, and my kids are homeschooled, so you can draw whatever conclusions you want to from that. But that would be a legal means, right? That would, like, going back to Nicole's, if we're talking about guidelines for saying no, that would be one great way to say, I don't think this is right for my kids to be subjected to this particular ideology through the curriculum that the state has adopted or the local school district, and in our case here, or, you know, and it's all tied to, you know, a lot of it gets its way into the schools through funding. It's not, you know, hey, sure, you don't have to teach us, but then we'll take all your federal money away if you don't. But that's one way for me to say I'm not going to do that, and there's a legal means for me to say my kids are going to be taught in a different way. I'm going to choose to send them to a private school, or I'm going to choose to teach them at home. That would be a legal way. Now, if that right gets taken away, then we're moving to the next step in the process. Who else was it? They have another? Yeah, Yuri.
I'm a fan of your advice. You advise somebody to disobey or something. Yeah. What needs to be considered? And I think it's all comments was right, but I think we should, even we're talking about abortion or something big like that, or as little as speed limit on a highway, mm-hmm. the question generally should be same if we really want to answer this question is why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing it, even it's abortion or something bigger than that, if there is such a thing, I have to ask, why am I doing? Is it my pure inconvenience that lies in my pure inconvenience? And I don't think I should disobey it mm-hmm. if it's simply my disobedience. I mean, my inconvenience. But if it's truly law goes against God's will and stuff. Right. That's where I think we should start. And anything in between, it doesn't matter unless I answer why am I trying to disobey it.
Right.
Because the Bible does says all government from the God. And even that abortion thing it's there for me to answer bigger questions than just abortion itself.
Right.
I think we should. It's what needs to be considered. Yeah. And otherwise, we'll try to play with every single law, and we will, like, mm-hmm. yesterday one thing was acceptable, well, today's not, and things changes, and our mindset will change everything, and it's going to be all kind of...
Absolutely. The why are we doing it? And I really like what you said. Is it just a matter of my inconvenience, or is there a larger principle at stake? That's definitely something I want to revisit and consider. But yeah, what we're looking here for, and the discussion is going to go in different ways, and that's fine. But looking here, what guidelines am I going to set up? What guard? If you think of it, driving down the highway, you got the guardrails on either side, so that if you're, you know, weaving back and forth, you at least have something you can bump against before you go off the cliff. That's kind of what we're looking at. I'm getting ready to say no to government. What are the guardrails that will help me make sure that I'm still on the straight and narrow, like that I'm doing this in the best way possible? It gets interesting. You think about who do I want to leapfrog to? One of the things that Stan brought up with the execution of Queen Athaliah, I believe, is who we're talking about. There's another queen who was executed in the Bible. Do you remember who that was? Jezebel by Jehu the son of Nimshi. All right. She said, is this you, Omri? I believe, referring back to a former biblical character, your master's murderer. And he said, throw her down. And they threw her down, and the dogs ate her, and all they found left was the hands and the palms of her hands and her feet, I think, when everything was done. So yeah, so he had that. Now, it's getting interesting. Are any of you in how many listen to political content throughout the week? Yeah. Okay. I do. Yeah. I'm not judging. How many are starting to hear strains of talk that people are getting? Like, I'm hearing hosts start to nibble at the edges of violent revolution. They're not saying. The hosts that I listen to are not saying we should be out in the streets right now. You know, in force against the government. But I have one that I listened to this previous week who's kind of like, what do we do at this point? Like,
What other means do we have? And it's and you kind of feel like they're just chewing at the edges. Is anyone else getting that sense from what Darren, you're hearing that? Is anyone else on what you're listening to, Araceli?
I hear,
yeah.
That the government is trying to please everybody, and so they can stay in the house, but they are doing right what is wrong and wrong what is right.
Okay. Yeah.
So then we are in the position now that even though that we see in the difference, how can we do?
Yeah.
We don't have the means. We don't have authority.
Right.
So what do we do when we see in those changes?
Yeah. And what you're voicing, I think, is a common sentiment. And I'm just. This is not part of what I was planning to say, but I'm feeling this. I'm not excited about that. I'm trying to not make a lot of really super definitive statements in this class, but if I can make one, I'm not excited about violent revolution. That's a place I would very much like to not get to. And what concerns me is you just start. I mean, there have been people in our country calling for violent revolution for a long time. You're going to find anything on the internet. So, but when I'm starting to hear people that I respect, people that I disagree with, but typically kind of am in their general scope of thought, and they're just kind of starting to get like these questions out on the table. This is one of the reasons why I want guardrails. I want ways that we can make sure at every step in this process, if we're going to say no, that this is governed by something. So that stuck in my mind with what you brought up, Stan, because. You know, it's not saying that there's not a time to forcibly oppose leadership. And some of the things that you brought up. Now, it's interesting, in your case, we have ecclesiastical authority in the role of the priest weighing in and bringing popular support against civil authority in the form of the queen. It's a little bit different than a popular revolution from the bottom, from, you know, the hoi polloi. Like,
so
there's
revolution should start in the church first.
Yes, revolution started the chance. Yeah,
just
quote me on that. Darren, let me jump to you and see.
We need to make sure that we're consistent in all areas of our lives. If we're going after one thing, mm-hmm. just to make sure that you're pure in your motives, that you've taken care of the other things that you can.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Consistency in our lives, purity in our motives. Let me pick up. If someone else has something to throw in, Stan has something more. Two times. No,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You just struck a nerve here. I just kidding.
You really want that dead queen, man?
yeah. I got it all going. Just a thought with Araceli's first question was using the New Testament as the example for that. They suffered the loss of their property mm-hmm. due to their beliefs. Now, one caveat that I've cried for a long time is that when we touch on this topic, citizens of two kingdoms, we need to look as one foundational principle what kind of government we're under.
Mm-hmm.
Like here, true. The government is for the people, supposed to be for the people, by the people, through
of the people.
A variety of means set in place legally.
Over the people, around the people,
yes,
under the
yes,
people.
Yes, yeah, yes. But like in their time, their government structure was not that.
Right.
Like they, as a people, did not have a majority vote. They didn't have means of addressing grievances the way that we do.
Right.
The whole beginning foundations of that government was very, very different.
Yeah. So I think we should probably admit, though, as a collective here, that most of us are probably ignorant about property rights under the Roman Empire, right?
I hear bits and pieces through R.C. Sproul.
Okay.
But
yeah. Just none of that is to counter what you're saying. Just like we're like I agree with you. We have a different government structure, but it's interesting. We start getting into ancient law,
yeah.
like how a lot of our political philosophy comes from the Greeks and the Romans. Like it's sometimes it's interesting how intricate things really were during that time. But go, please continue. I didn't mean to.
So with that all said, like when the time comes for an overthrow, like let's just take civil disobedience to the furthest way we can take it. For the sake of argument, like I get very nervous about, like we were saying, the nibblings in what we're hearing now about revolution. But it would seem that because of what our government was set up for, if the government currently, and I'm not saying this administration per se, but just any government, quote, currently in charge, would cross the line of what the original intent is still there. The founding documents are still there. We're governed by, supposed to be governed by, those founding documents. I could somewhat tentatively see a time when force would be used to reinstate the original. Not that I'm a fan of that, but I could see that happening at some point, depending on mass mindset, mm-hmm. rather than a ruling class that's risen up in a way that should not have.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and I'm not. I wouldn't disagree categorically that there's never a time for a people to use force to resist their government. It's just, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, when we start talking like that, the need for guardrails goes up even higher. Like, we really want to make sure, because you also need to know what's on the other side of that. And, you know, we think of revolution typically as a linear event where you throw off one government, but revolution typically indicates what, if we're speaking in terms of geometry? Yeah, revolution is what a circle does, right? A revolution is what a wheel does. And what you want to be careful with in a revolution is that you don't just end up in the same place that you were before. So it's like, hey, we overthrew, I can't even go back that far, but when the Arab Spring happened and they overthrew the government of Egypt, I forget who it was, and then they ended up with the Muslim Brotherhood in charge. And it's like, well, did we really get to where, you know, we wanted to be? Who filled the power vacuum left by Gaddafi? Like, who, like, this is, so the guardrails then become important too in knowing, even if we were to take it to the utmost extreme, what's on the other side of that, and how will we make sure that what's on the other side of that is what we're really supposed to have as government? Pastor John, let me.
Yeah, my mind is garbled.
If you speak into the top of it, that's easier, because the sides don't, yeah, there you go.
My mind is garbled.
Thank you.
Yuri mentioned inconvenience. I want to go back to what you said very in the beginning. Who are we?
Yeah.
Aliens and strangers. My rights, my property, my life, my what? Wait.
Mm-hmm.
I'm crucified with Christ.
Right.
Paul was very willing even to be arrested,
yep.
and willing to give his life. Mm-hmm. Just for the opportunity to represent Jesus Christ and to share.
Yeah.
And it's too easy to become me and this world centered
yeah.
and forget who I really belong to.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go ahead. I'll let Harold speak, and then I'm going to start picking through mine. And in so doing, I think I'll be able to pull in some of the threads that are out here that I hope to get back to. Yeah, Harold.
I think the guardrails are very important. excuse me. I do believe in revolution, but I mean, we look at the French Revolution. I'm not the expert there, but
right. Stannis, you can talk to him.
Okay,
but set himself up as a.
It wasn't good. It wasn't
yeah, right,
good.
Right.
What they were doing in response was not yeah. you know, just killing everybody, was guillotines. You know,
yeah.
it wasn't a good thing.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's very, very muddy waters, and we often aren't in the know as much as we think we are. I've seen a lot of people who have been very adamant, you know, in terms of their faith, you know, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And they could very well not be
right themselves.
They could be close, but have missed a very important part of it.
Yeah.
And I think as believers, I don't think it's our place to start a revolution. I think when there is a revolution, it should come from the large masses murmuring, leading to something.
Okay.
And we don't see. I don't see any examples from the New Testament where there's, where, you know, the people of God. That's the Jewish nation. That's something a little different. But in the New Testament, we have the Gentiles too, and we you know, we're intermixed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything where the believers are supposed to be initiating any kind of a revolution.
Okay.
But as my personal opinion, you know, in my limited knowledge, is when the whole masses, you know, then there's a place at some point, but those guardrails have to be really high.
Yeah.
And there's, and like you were suggesting, there's a likelihood of us getting it wrong, and the new the new regime.
Yeah, and the new regime, whoever stops saying, yeah, right.
Could be the same or even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, and just know too, we've definitely started talking about revolution because I think it was warranted with what we're hearing. Like when I put civil disobedience up there, that doesn't equal mass revolution overthrow of government in my mind. It could. Obviously that's one example, that's not an example of civil disobedience anymore. Now we're well beyond that point. Now we're talking actual revolution. But I'm talking about any time we say, you know, the government said to do that. I'm not going to do that. That may be with a very simple, you know, you might say the government said not to build a shed on my property. I'm going to build a shed on my property. That would be, you know, one example. Like it doesn't, it's, what we're talking here is not, you know, complete subjection to the government. And on the other side of the coin, violent revolution. So there are a lot of steps in between. I'm saying any time though that we say, I'm not going to do what they told me to do. What are the guidelines that we should have in place to try to stay as close as possible to the spirit of God's intent for government and our role in this life as believers, as citizens of heaven, who also happen to be citizens of a country and a commonwealth and a, you know, county on earth? Is that making sense to everybody? And revolution is definitely on the, you know, in there, you know, but there are a lot of steps before that. Let me start putting up a few of mine. And, you know, have more time to weigh in and also try to bring in some of the thoughts from earlier. I think one of the things that's become clear to me in studying for this course and probably just as a general principle for a long time, our disobedience can't be a repudiation of the institution of government itself. So if we're saying, I'm not going to obey this, we don't want that to mean that there's no role for government in my life or in the lives of other people. There has, and I'm not assuming that that's would be a hotly contested item in this room. I listen to some, I've, you know, heard people talk who are, you know, anarchists. I don't think we have any true anarchists among us. And if we do, we can talk about that. But the disobedience we do, we have to be able to respect the structure, even as we say no to an individual injunction or order. Could you turn to Daniel 6 with me? I think we've touched on Daniel 6 before in our study, but we're trying to reinforce to Micah the importance of having a Bible song in your head, books of the Bible. He realized that his Bible has, this Mike is my oldest son, realized that his Bible has a table of contents. And so when he needs to get to Genesis, he looks up the table of contents and then he goes to Genesis. So I'm like, that's all right, you can do that, buddy, but not everyone's going to be like that. So I was just using my Bible song. Daniel chapter 6, beginning with verse 10, this is King Darius. I was right, Brian. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that's verse 9, that is the injunction. The document we know was that no one can pray to any god for 30 days except the king, right? Now, when Daniel knew, verse 10, that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had been doing previously. It's very clear. Daniel knew that the injunction had been signed. He knew that the king had passed this into law, and he still did what he did. Then Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den. Most of us are familiar with that story. And then verse 19, then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me. Inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king, I have committed
no crime. I never noticed it until I was preparing for this morning. That's a very interesting statement that Daniel makes at the end of verse 22, isn't it? How does Daniel say that? Because what did he do when he prayed to God, Professor John? Okay. Right, right.
If you set up a law that goes against the higher law, it is no law.
Okay. All right. So that's one interpretation. Anyone else?
His faith.
His faith?
His faith was exactly what he's supposed to do.
Totally. I totally agree with that. But when he says, even toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. I'd like to break down the Hebrew of that Aramaic or whatever. There's some parts of Daniel that are written in a different language. But it's interesting. What were you going to say, Darren? Right. Yeah. 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 I think that's good. It's just interesting because from a legal standpoint, he had committed a crime. Yes. He had broken the law. And so it's interesting. It says, toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. Nicole, what did you want to say? Oh, well, that's the wrong translation. So we're not going to get in. No, I'm perfectly fine with the ESV. I think ESV is a good translation. Who knows? Someday we may be using it here.
And it says, "I have committed no harm."
Harm, yeah.
And I think there's an aspect of like whose definition of crime harm are we looking at? Everything, and that like. Like, my Lord, I've sinned against you type of thing. When we sin against people around us, that sin is against God, everything that. And right. So to me, there's the quandary of, like, harm, sin, crime. Are these all somewhat words mixed together that are used for other things in our world and everything? And the thing of, like, him saying, even though he committed a legal crime, I wasn't sinning against you. I wasn't going against you in a personal attack.
When Daniel did this, was his intent, was his main intent to defy the king? No, his main intent was to honor God, right? So, but what's interesting is Daniel wants Darius to know that, right? The time for those protestations, to me, if we were just going from a logical standpoint, would be before you were thrown into the lion's den, right? I haven't committed a crime against you. That's when you scream when they're dragging you away to the guillotine, or when they're dragging you away to the firing squad, or when they're dragging you away, in this case, to the lion's den. That's when you say, hey. But Daniel wants to make sure after the fact, after God has shown his great power in his behalf, that Darius understands that Daniel respects the structure of government under which he has been placed. He wants to make sure Darius understands, I wasn't, whatever interpretation, I think the ones that have been put about the higher law are perfectly valid, that I wasn't going against you. I'm not trying to get out from under this structure. Jim, was it you?
What I'm gathering from all this is that in Christ, with our identity, we should live in peace, whatever circumstance. Daniel respected the position that the king had, whereas we should respect the position of the office of the presidency, whether we agree or disagree with him, we can still live with the confidence that we have Christ to live our daily lives. I don't know how I would react, going back to this violent revolution, how I would react if it's come to a local area.
Mm-hmm.
Do I take?
And you were asked to join the militia.
Do I take the rest of my guns inside loaded or what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
but I would hope that I would just use my identity in Christ to live out whatever happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and please, you know, here, the violent revolution, that's like, I want to stay as far away from that conversation as possible. I want to acknowledge it as part of our understanding of our governmental system. But yeah, and we're definitely not getting on YouTube anymore with this. I hear hosts saying that all the time now. Well, this isn't going to make it out on YouTube because we went too far. So we got a couple. Brian, you had one?
Yeah. While we're in Daniel, we also have Meshach Shadrach and Abednego.
Right, yeah.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, very much. What's interesting is I looked at the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego narrative, and I didn't see as much of this deference. It wasn't that they weren't rude to Nebuchadnezzar. They weren't disrespectful from what I can see. But I didn't see the same level of, because I thought it was there too, and it's not, that, oh, king, live forever, which, you know, it was just a comment. It seems like it was just a polite phrase at that point. But I hadn't seen that. But definitely the same type of situation where they were led to do what they did by their convictions. But again, this desire here to uphold the structure, even as we're saying, in this instance, I'm saying no, but I'm saying no to this rule. I'm saying no to this law. I'm saying no to this executive order. I'm saying no to this mandate. But I am not saying no to the institution of government. I still respect it. I still want to uphold it. Because God's the one who put it there, absolutely. Yeah, that's what's controlling this. Yeah, Harold. Oh, I'm sorry. All right, let's get Cindy, because she hasn't spoken yet, and Harold's already spoken once. So, and I don't know who was first. And did you have something more that you wanted to say? Okay, go ahead, Cindy.
The passage in Jeremiah 29, where God is talking to the exiles.
Yeah.
He says, verse 7, seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf. For in its welfare, you will have welfare.
Yeah.
So the idea of wherever we're at, to be a positive moral influence and influence for good, for God's character,
Absolutely. And that, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, and that controls every, like, again, what are the guardrails? Well, having that disposition of I want to seek the welfare of the state. I'm not here to be a traitor to the state, and I'm not here to work against it. Yeah, Harold, what were you going to?
This isn't new. It seems pronounced in those situations with Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There doesn't seem to be that dragging as they're being dragged to the pit.
Yeah.
They were civilly disobedient.
Yeah.
And they submitted to without causing a big ruckus. They just submitted to the punishment unfairly that it was done to them, and God did what God was going to do with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going back to the legal means that Nicole talked about. Use the legal means. We don't know if there was any opportunity for Daniel in his position to contest the law of the Medes and the Persians. I don't know how that played out. Seems like they would have kept him out of those backroom talks because they were actually targeting him. So, but also submit yourselves to the punishment. If the punishment comes, this is part of the process. Yeah. Brian?
I just wanted to say something that I heard this week that's kind of related to this. So Douglas Wilson, he's a pastor in Idaho. His church during COVID, they weren't allowed to sing loudly outside because singing could spread mm-hmm. germs.
Yeah.
So they organized the psalm sing outside.
Uh-huh.
And they sang psalms, and then the police came and arrested some people.
Yeah.
And broke up the psalm sing and said you can't sing psalms outside.
Yeah.
But they disobeyed because they knew that that's not an actual law. You can sing psalms outside.
Yeah.
And you also have a right to assemble. Mm-hmm. So they did it, and they did it as a reaction to that law, not even a law, that order.
Yeah, and public health order, probably.
Yeah, right. Some people got arrested.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to the consequences, and they face some consequences. But I heard this week that they won a lawsuit against mm-hmm. the city. They won $300,000.
Yeah.
Because we have a right to assemble, and you can't just... The government can't just invent law out of nowhere and call it public health or an emergency or anything. I mean, maybe they can, but you can stand up and find out. And they won.
Yeah.
And they could have not won, and they still would have been right. Or we could be in a country where there's no such thing as right to assembly, and it still would have been right mm-hmm. because God says to not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. So it's not about right or wrong. It's about what are you willing to sacrifice in that situation? What are you willing to risk at that moment to get back the rights order risk.
And we're going to keep, and especially, look, I'm sorry, Dominique.
No, that's fine. That was all.
Especially going back to the COVID era, we're going to constantly find, you know, places where people pushed against the boundaries. It's been interesting. I finally, I got Tracy and then Vanya when I'm done babbling. I finally gave in to Pastor John David's gentle pressure to get me to expand my podcast listening. I've been more news, entertainment, political oriented, and you know, for years he's been trying to get me to expand very gently. I want to say that very gently, just dropping a little pebble in the pond every now and then. So I finally started to say, okay, I'm going to do the briefing, pastor's talk, and mortification of spin. So those are three. So I try to alternate. I listen to one of my normal, and then I listen to one of those, and I listen to one of those, and I go back and forth somewhere on the break for the summer. So during the summer break, and even before that, I've been going back through some of the old episodes. So I'm on like episode 136 of Pastor's Talk right now. That's Mark Dever, Jonathan Lehman, about half an hour. Then they usually bring in another guest or two, and they focus on a different topic that they think is important for pastors to consider, but also has good implications for, you know, the laity as well. And there, and now I'm back in COVID. I'm like hard COVID now because I'm back in like 2020. And they were discussing John MacArthur's decision, not his, but the decision of the elders at Grace Community Church in San Francisco, right? No, LA. Thank you. To say we're gonna go back to meeting. You can no longer tell us. But it's just interesting. All the. You know, is this what we would do? Is this right? Should Christians support this? Should we be felt like we're required to support it? How should we handle this? It's just been interesting. We're going to find all of these anecdotes about what people did, what people didn't do. And that's why I'm trying so hard to get some guidelines in place, because it gets so easy. Well, you know, this person did this, and then this person did this, and they did that, and I don't know about that. Like, it's so easy to get torn, you know, from one side to another in these conversations, to try to find some pillars that we can say, let's make sure we're not doing this, this, or this as we move our way through. So I totally agree with, you know, where they're coming from. Knowing in every instance what's appropriate is really difficult, and that's where we're trying to forge ahead with some of these. Tracy, we're definitely not getting done with this today. Surprise, surprise. So we're going to take the last 5 minutes to just kind of wrap things up, and then we'll pick it up again next week.
I'm back in Daniel 6.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, I used to always think that the commissioners and the satraps, they try to put that law in for Darius to sign so that they could have Daniel persecuted, killed, whatever. But when I look in verse 5, it says, then these men said, we will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God.
Yeah.
So it was, they were trying to trick him up on maybe Daniel, okay, well, I'm not going to pray. And then they can point and say, see, he's not really a God follower. This is what I'm thinking in my mind.
We can respectfully disagree. I think your original analysis was right. They just said, okay, Daniel's not, like, he is not a treasonous, disrespectful, disobedient. He's not a political mover and shaker. Like, he's not trying to get Darius like stabbed in the back so that he can move up the ranks. We're only going to be able, the one thing that Daniel will act consistently in is in the law of his God. We know without fail that Daniel will pray to his God. If we're going to get him in hot water with the king, we're going to have to find some way to put the law of his God and the law of the king at odds. So that then we know what Daniel's going to do. It's already baked in, like it's hard coded. Daniel is going to pray to his God. If we get Darius to sign a law that he can't pray to his God, then we got him, because then he's disobeyed a God. We're not going to find, so you can imagine them trying to dig up dirt on Daniel. Like, oh, we know that, oh no, Daniel didn't do that. Well, we know, Daniel didn't do that. Like, Daniel was a respectable, obedient, fruitful, you know, employee under the government of the Medes and the Persians. We were going to have to get him on it. So that's where I think your original analysis was correct on that. Yeah, absolutely. Vanya.
I lost a little, I kind of lost track of the question, but what I can say in the context of what we're talking about, if Al Mohler was right when he said that worldview translates into worship, that, and which means that our if our lives are, the purpose of our lives is to be offered up as a worship to God, mm-hmm. then it is very important to have a good worldview in that will affect how we react to the government. And so one of the ways to shape a biblical worldview is how we study history. And I think that back to what Sam was saying, and what you mentioned what Sam was saying, is, yeah, there was actually a lot of similarities between now today's government and the Roman government. There's actually like a surprising amount of similarities. But another thing that is very similar is human nature. Completely similar. Yeah. And I think that a lot of the mistakes can be avoided, that circle thing that we talked about, is when you study history. And I think that that's one of the cool things about what Churchill did, is he, really imperfect guy, but one of the reasons why he was able to stand up to Hitler when a lot of Britain wanted to surrender was because he knew what history was. He said, I know where this trend is. I'm not sure if it was him.
You think in the darkest hour?
Yes.
Nations who go down fighting rise again.
Exactly. And
who capitulate don't.
Exactly. And, yeah. He also said that you can't reason with a lion when your head is in its mouth.
You can't reason with a tiger when your head is in
right.
its mouth.
And that is because this guy had studied history.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so important. But again, through a biblical worldview.
Right.
And that takes, again, the cliche Christian answer, humility. Yeah. As understanding that I don't have all the pieces. I don't know what each of these historical figures went through, but I need to study this. And again, biblical worldview for the purpose of worship to God.
Yeah, and humility is the same thing that says we could get this wrong. Like, government can get it wrong. The United States can get it wrong. We can get it wrong in our resistance. So what am I going to look to along the way? I'm sorry, Stan. You're done. You're toast. Thank you, though. Bring it for next time, though, please. Right? You know, get someone to dictate it, whatever. Bring it back. But we could get this wrong. So what's going to keep me? I want fences so I'm not left to my own devices to shoot from the hip in this situation, because I know I have the humility to say I could really screw this up. So yeah. So real quick, so obviously we won't go where I thought we were going to go next week. We'll come back to this. We got through 1.7, so 7 more weeks and we should be good. 6 more weeks. So we'll come back. I will not do the review that I did today, since hopefully a week won't completely kill it for you. We'll jump right in with these other points. I'll try to get a few on the table and then I'll open it up and we'll see if we can move through it next time. Thank you so much. Let's just be dismissed in prayer. Father, thank you once again. I appreciate the lively conversation that we were able to have, and hearing that obviously, those who are in this class, we thought about some of these things before. Maybe not I considered every angle. I know this tying together has been very helpful for me in bringing some things to the forefront, or causing me to reconsider or to bolster points that I thought were already solid. But please continue in every area of our lives, with that humility that Vanya mentioned, just continuing to look to you. God, how do I do this? How do I love my neighbor? How do I serve the larger body? How do I deal with the government of the place in which I live in a way that honors you and also honors the purposes for which you established government in the first place? Please be with us as we move into the time of worship with the larger body, and we thank you so much. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.